Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, September 17, 2018. President Salva Kiir calls Riek Machar about reports of fighting in Nyei River State.
Why is he still fighting us when we have signed the agreement? So I told him, what is this? Is it the acquisition or more territory? But we have signed the agreement. I don't want us to go back to war again.
And a member of the South Sudan National Security opens fire on peacekeepers in Nyei.
This direct attack on peacekeepers who are here to help the people of South Sudan is unacceptable. The perpetrator must be found and held accountable.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir says he called rebel leader Riek Machar this morning to discuss reports of fighting in parts of Nyei River State. The president says the peace deal he signed with Machar and other opposition parties in Addis Ababa marks the end of war. He urges all South Sudanese to forgive one another. Manyang David Mayar reports for VOA from Juba.
He's speaking at a memorial service for the 20 victims of last week's plane crash in Yerol of Eastern Lagos State. Mr. Kiir said, for the past 3 days, government and SPLA-IO forces have been fighting in parts of Nyei River State. He told the congregation at All Saints Cathedral in Juba that during today's phone conversation with Machar, he asked the chairman of the SPLA-IO to order his forces not to attack government troops for the sake of peace.
It was my initiative to call him and see why is he still fighting us when we have signed the agreement. So I told him, what is this? Is it the acquisition of more territory? But we have signed the agreement. I don't want us to go back to war again. So you talk to your commanders in the field so that they don't attack us again.
Kiir, Machar, and the leaders of other parties signed what they call a final revitalized 2017 peace agreement in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa last week. The president says the peace deal marks the end of 5 years of civil war.
I want to personally assure you that the agreement we have just signed has ended the war. Your suffering provided the primary motivation for this government to pursue peace by all means necessary.
President Kiir is calling on the South Sudanese people to join the government and others in implementing the peace deal and to put their differences with other community members behind them.
I want to appeal to all of you to embrace and accept this peace agreement. Your brothers and your sisters from the opposition side, and so that we close the dark chapter on the war. By forgiving each other, we give a chance to peace and prosperity of our people and our nation.
According to the agreement, the parties are supposed to form a joint defense command, which will include soldiers from the government side, as well as those from other armed groups. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar in Juba.
The ceasefire and transitional security arrangement monitoring mechanism, also known as CITISAM, confirmed the reports of fighting in Nyei town days after the revitalized peace agreement was signed by the warring parties. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
CITISAM, the body monitoring South Sudan's ceasefire, says it's investigating reports of clashes between government and SPLA-IO forces in Nyei River State. In a Twitter post on Saturday, CITISAM said it received reports of violations of the ceasefire agreement in the Nyei area and reminded the parties of their commitment to refrain from any form of hostilities. A civil society activist who prefers to be identified only as Benson for security reasons tells South Sudan in Focus that civilians fear for their lives.
When I see people being reserved now in the way they talk and the way they walk. I mean, they do their things in town because people are having this suspicion that something anytime and anywhere can happen.
He says since the beginning of the month, government and rebel forces have clashed in Lainya of Yei River State. Benson says residents are questioning if the parties are serious about implementing the agreement signed last week. SPLA spokesman Major General Lulurai Kwong confirms that fighting between government and SPLA forces has continued after the deal was signed, but claims the rebels attacked government positions in Kajukeji and Lainyam, killing 2 soldiers and wounded 8 others.
We heard continuous rebel attacks on our defensive positions at Sokre in Kajukeji County. That was on the 13th, on the 14th, and again on the 15th. On the 15th, that was on Saturday at around 11. That was a very fierce offensive attack at Sokre. Our forces fought well in self-defense. They were able to repulse the attackers. The other clashes we have heard in the last 3 to 4 days were around Jamara and Mundu.
Kwong says the rebels are trying to take control of more territory before their forces are reassembled. He says fighting continued over the weekend, forcing SPLA to withdraw some forces from Mundu, Lainya County, and that other clashes took place in Lier. SPLA or Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lampol Gabriel denies the rebels attacked government positions.
They were the ones who came from Yei and Pakula, and they came and hit us at Jamara and Kupera on the 29th last month. The fighting continued, but we managed to temporarily take back Jamara, but they also came back and took it from us. That's why up to now they are there in Jamara, but Mundu was with us and we managed to get it.
Gabriel claims the SPLIO killed 15 government soldiers and confiscated government ammunition during fighting in Kajukeji last week. Benson is calling on both warring parties to respect the deal they signed to and allow civilians to live in peace. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still in Yei River State, the South Sudan Army says it has arrested a member of the national security who shot and injured one UN peacekeeper. The shooting took place in Yei town over the weekend. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Military spokesman Major General Lulurai Kwong says a South Sudan National Security Service officer shot and wounded a UN peacekeeper in the leg. He says the suspect is due to appear before a military court to answer yet unspecified charges.
The action we took as the government was suspect was immediately arrested, is going to be investigated, and is going to be held accountable for his own actions.
Speaking in a pre-recorded statement, David Shira, the UN Secretary General's special representative in South Sudan, says the peacekeepers were traveling in a 4-vehicle convoy to collect water on Saturday when an armed man shot and wounded a Nepalese peacekeeper. Shira condemned the attack.
This direct attack on peacekeepers who are here to help the people of South Sudan is unacceptable. The perpetrator must be found and held accountable by government authorities. The situation is evident of a lack of command and control of armed forces, which has resulted in unruly elements who continue to commit human rights abuses in the area. And so it's beholden on the government to bring their forces under control.
Kwong insists the perpetrator is an individual, not under the general command of the SPLA.
We could not just be accused of lack of command and control because one single personnel from national security opened fire. And that's why an investigation committee will find out exactly what were the motive.
In his recorded statement, Shira also called for an immediate end to the fighting in Yei.
The signing of the revitalized peace agreement by all parties to the conflict a few days ago heralded a time of optimism for the future. So it's disheartening that despite this new agreement, fighting is continuing in the central Equatorian region. All forces must disengage as required by the peace agreement and end the violence. The parties must also work together to build trust between themselves.
Earlier this month, a South Sudan military court sentenced 10 soldiers behind bars for a period ranging from 7 to 14 years in prison for raping foreign aid workers, killing a local journalist, and destroying property at a Terrain hotel during fighting in July 2016. While insisting the man who shot the Nepalese peacekeeper is not a soldier, Kwong says the SPLA leadership is working to end impunity among soldiers and to ensure that the military respect international laws. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
From Juba, we move to neighboring Sudan. In a bid to ease Sudan's economic crisis, austerity moves were introduced to include a smaller cabinet as the country grapples with an acute foreign exchange shortage and inflation above 65%. Peter Pham is Vice President of Research at the Atlantic Council and Director of its Africa Center. He spoke to VOA's senior analyst, Mohamed Ashinawe, about the significance of the reshuffle and what Sudan needs to do to overcome its woes.
There are several things. One, it needs a little new energy into it. So I think it sends a signal that they're serious about changing the way they do business. Now, what we have to wait to see is he swore in a new prime minister, Motaz Musa, but he has not yet appointed the new cabinet in its entirety. There were 31 ministers. There will be 21. So there's going to be I think everyone's going to wait to see who remains, who comes, and how the new cabinet will be organized.
The United States has kept Sudan on its list of state sponsors of terrorism despite ending two decades of sanctions in October. Sudanese officials argue that international investors will remain wary of re-engaging in Sudan so long as the country remains on the U.S. terror watch list. Was that the main reason for Sudan's economic crisis?
Well, I think it certainly is not helpful, but most U.S. economic sanctions were removed by President Donald Trump last October. And the fact is, even without those sanctions, which freed up most sectors of the Sudanese economy for investment, it's actually a business decision on the part of many investors not to go into the market. Sudan has a notoriously difficult business environment. The World Bank's Doing Business report, which is an annual report on how easy or hard it is to business, ranks Sudan fairly badly at 170 out of 190 countries and territories surveyed. So very much near the bottom. It's an ease of doing business, and certainly that makes it difficult to invest. In terms of protecting minority investors, Sudan ranks, according to the World Bank, 186 out of 190. So these are fundamentals that I think even more than sanctions, which preclude investors, and this is what the new cabinet under the new prime minister will need to tackle.
Food prices have more than doubled since last year, causing high inflation rate in Sudan, while the Sudanese pound has plunged against the U.S. dollar. What's really needed to counter the economic crisis in Sudan?
Several things. First and foremost, economic reforms. These are not going to be easy. They're going to be painful, but that's because the economy for such a long time has been distorted. Secondly, the country needs to open up to investors by making itself easier to do business with. I think the business climate, removing economic sanctions was a significant step. Prospectively removing the terrorism sponsor designation will be another step. But even if both those things were done, without the fundamentals being addressed, it remains a problem. Another problem in Sudan is infrastructure. The country's in tremendous need of infrastructure to take advantage of any investors that might come, as well as the possibilities that the building of the Ethiopian Renaissance Dam provides for increased power, increased agriculture in the country, but needs infrastructure. And I think it's very interesting that President Bashir picked the Minister of Water, Irrigation, and Electricity to be the new prime minister.
That was Peter Pham of the Atlantic Council speaking with VOA's Mohamed Ashinawe. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Ugandan officials are accusing Europeans for interfering into their affairs. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Do you have any suggestions for how governments can fight illegal child labor?
I think the government should put stringent and strict laws so that can govern, tackle like every person that is exercising child labor.
Do something for the youth, especially the youths, like start up some stuff that the youths can engage themselves into. Those that are not going to school, because most of the things happening because these people didn't go to school.
Those laws are there. They don't follow them up. There's nothing that is being done. It should start putting into practice whatever it puts down.
The government should ban those people who employ young people, and then those companies that tend to say they are taking the youth outside to work. Most of the time you find that those people go there and they end up suffering.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Ugandan government has struck back at the European Union Parliament over its resolutions regarding alleged human rights violations in Uganda. A Ugandan government official calls the resolutions biased and unfair. Catherine Nambi reports for VOA from Kampala.
In the 13th September resolution, the European Union Parliament warned Uganda against committing human rights violations. The resolution is in response to last month's arrest of lawmaker Robert Kyagulanyi, commonly known as Bobi Wine, along with four legislators and 30 of their supporters in Uganda's Arua municipality. Those arrested say they were tortured in custody. They have been charged with treason for allegedly pelting President Yoweri Museveni's convoy with stones. Among their resolutions, the EU MPs also called for Kyagulanyi's unconditional release and for the charges against him to be dropped. Uganda government spokesperson Ofwono Pondo said the resolutions are based on unfounded reports.
Uganda would like to assume that the EU parliamentarian either acted out of their naturally limited knowledge of our country or picked rumors and verified conversation on social media and therefore have chosen to remove any veil of pretense about where they stand when it comes to judging the various players in the Uganda political scene.
Opondo accused some non-government organizations in Uganda of being behind the information that EU officials relied on.
Both the nature of the debate that transpired and the final resolution by the MPs on the floor of their parliament showed every sign of active coaching, including prepared short texts for each of the MPs to read.
He said the EU parliament did not seek a response from the Uganda government, which he called a failure of established diplomatic procedure. Opondo noted that Uganda is a signatory to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the United Nations Convention Against Torture, and the African Charter on Democracy, Elections and Governance. Thus, he said, the government respects human rights and democracy. Acting Information Minister Chris Baliomunsi asked the EU MPs to let Uganda's investigative arms conclude their investigations into the Arua events.
It is not them to instruct Uganda on what to do with the cases which are before court. When they say the state should drop the charges, are they saying that we do not know why charges have been preferred against the various suspects? Investigations are being carried out even on the security officers with a view of finding out if there is any that breached the law.
Bobi Wine and 34 others returned to court on October 1st. The popular singer, who is out of prison on bail, is in the United States for medical attention over what he says was torture he was subjected to while he was in custody. In public appearances in the U.S., he has appeared badly injured. President Museveni, who is 74, has been in office 32 years, and he remains popular with many older Ugandans for having brought stability to the nation. But more than 70% of the population is under the age of 35, and many of those voters are interested in younger leadership. Human rights organizations say Uganda's government has become increasingly repressive towards its critics, allegations the government denies.
This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
From Kampala, we move to Burundi, where the Commission of Inquiry on Burundi expresses alarm at the persistent and widespread violations of human rights in the country, some of which it says constitute crimes against humanity. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where the Commission has presented its final report on the situation in Burundi to the UN Human Rights Council.
The report presents a picture of an outlaw state, of a state where gross violations of human rights perpetrated against its political opponents reign with impunity. It says violations, which include extrajudicial killings, enforced disappearances, arbitrary arrests, torture, and sexual violence, are used by the government and its allies to bend the Burundian people to its will. The commission accuses members of the National Intelligence Service, including senior officials and the police, of serious violations. It also expresses concern by the growing role played by the youth militia, the Imbonerakure, in controlling the population. Commission member Françoise Hampson says the Burundian state is to blame for the wrongful acts committed by the Imbonerakure, since it exercises overall effective control. She speaks through an interpreter.
The climate of disregard for human rights in Burundi continues to be fomented by repeated calls for hatred and violence by authorities, including the head of state, and by an overall context of impunity. The judiciary in Burundi is not independent and has not been so for several years.
The government of Burundi has refused to cooperate with the commission, declaring its members persona non grata. The commission has collected more than 400 testimonies from victims and witnesses in neighboring countries, as well as remotely from Burundians residing in the country. The commission is appealing to the UN Council to renew its mandate for one more year, especially in light of the preparation for the 2020 elections. It notes the number of serious human rights violations that occurred in 2015, when President Pierre Nkurunziza ran for and won a controversial third term. Burundi's ambassador to the UN, Renovat Tabu, was scathing in his reply. He rejected the report, calling it false, politically motivated, insulting, and derogatory. He says the report is scandalous and a flagrant violation of Burundi's sovereignty. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Geneva, we move to Kigali. Many African countries are tackling land distribution and rights issues. And in Rwanda, activists are also discussing the national land policy. They want the government to remember that most Rwandans are poor farmers and many are losing land because of poor planning that allows development projects to encroach onto ancestral lands. The Rwanda Land Management and Use Authority says agricultural land in Kigali city is declining rapidly. 70% has been used for construction in Kichukiro district alone. Eugene Uimana reports for VOA from Rwandan capital Kigali.
Over 80% of Rwanda's people earn their living from agriculture, yet the poorest Rwandans are farmers. Part of the problem is that Rwanda is one of the continent's most crowded countries. 12 million people in just 24,000 square kilometers of land. Justin Kairaba is the director of the one-stop center Nyarugenge, an urban planning center that deals with issues like monitoring planning compliance and construction safety. She says Kigali expands and farms disappear.
The whole of that area is also covered. It's another coming up city. When you go to Karumnas, you're going to Bochesera, it's another city. When you go to side of Ramagana, you see. So it's like the city has enlarged. There is no difference between the city of Kigali and its surrounding. So I think you better think about it and see how you can do in terms of land use.
Less than half of the land can be tiled, and many worry the percentage could shrink fast because of overdevelopment. Nezrijari Florian is a land use planning and monitoring specialist with the Ministry of Natural Resources. He suggests legal measures should be imposed when the development master plan is violated.
You see that there is a kind of disconnection. There is a kind of discrepancy in terms of compliance. Both some people are being issued construction permits, not complying to the existing land use plans. We have observed some cases. So we want to address that and impose serious measures against those people violating, both those people implementing the master plans and from government offices giving rights of housing development.
Jean-Claude Musabyimana, the permanent secretary of the Ministry of Land and Forestry, says the ministry already is working to protect agricultural land.
We have started already to register, to conduct a survey and a mapping of all agricultural land in Rwanda. We have already issued the ministerial instruction on the protection and the management of the agricultural land. So we have forbidden all encroachment on the existing agricultural land while we are waiting for the registration and proper measures to protect this land.
Land issues are sensitive in Rwanda. Courts and mediation councils continue to handle scores of cases arising from the public land sharing policy that was carried out between 1994 and 2012. During those years, the first systematic registration of all land was done, and those registrations are by law. Holders of registered land enjoy the same rights as those who have land under what's known as customary holdings. Many of the registrations, however, are highly disputed. Land is a controversial issue in other parts of the continent too, such as South Africa, where land expropriation is a hot topic. Some researchers say that for Africa, land is much more than an economic issue. Many communities see it as a spiritual element, and they are tied to the land, as the whole process of human living from birth to death has a linkage to land in Africa. Ejen Wimana for VOA News, Kigali.
From Kigali, we move to Addis Ababa, where police killed at least 5 people in the Ethiopian capital today amid angry protests over attacks on the city's outskirts that left at least 23 dead. Ethnic tensions remain high despite Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's reforms that have eased authoritarian rule and ended the long conflict with neighboring Eritrea. The two countries signed a deal yesterday to strengthen their relations. Violence broke out Saturday after a rally to celebrate the return of exiled leaders of the Oromo Liberation Front, a rebel group that recently signed a peace deal with the government. Reports say young Oromo mobs attacked 3 small ethnic groups and looted businesses in the Burau district. About 200 people were arrested. Officials claim the attackers were paid to fan anger against Abiy's reforms. The OLF fought for decades seeking self-determination for Oromos, who are Ethiopia's largest ethnic group. The rampage in Barau set off today's protest. Police say they killed 5 demonstrators who tried to grab their weapons. That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song "You Are One in a Million" by Justin Simpleman.
Wayamu makuri nyutwa, awinyu kuru mage kendali. Ibaru wia kuji kuji, kuri lengi nemki buri kikemba dali. Ibaru wia kuji kuji, kuri lengi nemki buri kikemba dali. Corona mingmo gudbari, that wal woke kuma yeo biere. Corona mingmo gudbari, that wal woke kuma yeo biere. Ikinwa, 1 in a million, you better than them, my baby. Ano kuo yon one kuri. 1 in a million, you're better than them, my love. I know for your one quid. 1 in a million, you're better than them, my baby. I know for your one quid. 1 in a million, you're better than them, my love. I know for your one quid. You tell me, you can't miri my china kaiti mudong.
We've been listening to Justin Simpleman with the song "You Are One in a Million." I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. Would like to hear what you think about this show. You can find us at South Sudan at voanews.com. You can also contact us on our Facebook Our title is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.